8th of August sees publication of the 8th book in the D.S. Hutton series, Blood in My Eyes, only 3 months after the release of the 7th. All of a sudden, Hutton novels are coming around faster than Tory Prime Ministers. I've written the first two novels in a completely new series, but my agent is out and about with those at the moment, and so, as the world of publishing moves along at its traditional funereal pace, civilizations rise and fall while we wait to see if anyone's going to bite, I've retreated to familiar territory and started writing Hutton novels with a fervour not seen since Dostoevsky wrote the first draft of Crime and Punishment in a fortnight. After the 7th in the series, Let Me Die in My Footsteps, took our hero off to the Highlands in winter, number 8 has him back in Cambuslang in the middle of a long, hot summer. Here's the blurb. Brutally gripping, gleefully macabre. D.S. Hutton is back and there's blood flowing, faces bitten off, slashed throats, frenzied stabbing and severed heads. There's a killer abroad in Glasgow and all hell is let loose. A low-level gangland villain gets out of prison, goes seeking revenge in the man whose testimony put him away. The villain's body is found 2 days later. The intended victim, turned aggressor, goes missing, then embarks on an insane killing spree. One victim a night, a reign of terror, the police helpless in the face of uncommon brutality. In the midst of it all, Hutton cannot help but be himself. Drinking too much, sleeping with the wrong women, interviewing the wrong people at the wrong time. And as the killer closes in on the police, the wasted, sidelined Hutton is all that stands between them and the harsh, vengeful carnage of madness. So, Blood in My Eyes, published on the 8th of August. The ebook's available for pre-order now. The paperback can't be pre-ordered, but it will be available at the time of publication. Four hours, a sandwich and several cups of tea later, Callas and I are talking to Dr. Forbes. In traditional formation, us on one side of the corpse, Forbes on the other. Ella Fitzgerald is playing, lending a slightly surreal atmosphere. These foolish things. Although it's obviously possible to listen to Ella Fitzgerald and Louis Armstrong and Life without finding yourself in a movie situation, since I don't listen to either of them, and you hear them soundtracking certain types of movies, often as juxtaposition. It always makes me feel like I'm in a film. And I guess here I am, the detective, standing over the body. Who's playing me in this movie? Ewan McGregor, obviously. Or Ken Stott, or somewhere in between. We've established several times, or at least Eileen and I have established through careful consideration, that Callas is played by Alicia Vikander. Forbes? Emma Thompson, perhaps? Emma might have to put a little weight on, but she could carry it off without it. Jamie Robson's corpse is probably done by CGI because that fucker looks horrendous. Bite someone's nose off and you'll see what I mean. Although, to be honest, that's probably something that's best left to your imagination. I notice Forbes smiling curiously at me. Still with the sergeant? I'm good. Just, you know. She nods. She and Callas share a glance. We don't have any DNA results yet, so no confirmation that Tatum was responsible for that. And she indicates the face. But we should get it through in the morning. I guess the team will be the same with the rolling pin, and she finishes the list that includes the plastic bin liners and the kitchen knives and the blood that was almost entirely, but not quite, cleared up off the floor with a small wave. Anything we should know? I ask, indicating the corpse. The first wound was definitely the one inflicted with a knife. Low wound to the side there, presumably by whatever means Tatum caught Robson off guard. The face biting seems something of a desperation measure, so I'm going to say Robson, with an adrenaline surge, quickly recovers from the knife. It would have killed him soon enough, but in the heat of battle, he grabs Tatum, he's in his face, and Tatum panics, does the only thing that's open to him. He must have dropped the knife. You'd think. Robson pulls away, the nose wasn't bitten off, it was torn off, and then we come to the testicular bruising. Sharp kick, or punch. Either way, there was weight behind it. There's also evidence of a heavy blow to the side of the head, so I'd say Tatum grabbed the rolling pin and hit out. Robson's now felled, bleeding, hurting, disfigured, bloody, much, much easier prey than he would otherwise have been. Tatum takes his chance, kneels in his chest, rolling pin to the throat, crushes the breath out of him. And man, that's all she wrote, I say glibly, because I can't help myself. Yes, Sergeant, that was. There'd have been a lot of blood from that wound, but I believe they found most of it soaked into dish towels and dumped in the outside bin. Bar that basic clean-up, he made minimal effort to cover his tracks, says Callas. Why bother at all? Asks Forbes, though the question is asked in a familiar tone where four words managed to convey that it's not at all relevant to her work as the pathologist. Maybe it was intended to hoodwink his wife, I say. Had she gone round there to look for him, she was likely just to establish she wasn't there and then leave. She wasn't going to go looking in bins and cupboards. So the clean-up, such as it was, would be enough to pass her scrutiny. On the other hand, perhaps it was aimed at buying time during a casual search by the police and I turned up and gave him exactly what he required. Forbes has nothing to say to that. Callas gives me a small, absolving headshake. Anything else? I think we have the basic order of the events, said Forbes. Tatum called his wife, he said. Yeah, 10:43. I put time of death between 10:30, a stretch 10:45. Likely the calling his wife was the first thing he did, says Callas. Yes. So I think that's all I've got for you for now. We can speak again in the morning. I'll get this written up, then hopefully I'll get some further results back. I'll send them over, give you a call if it's necessary. Thank you, Doctor. The last looked down at the ugly motherfucker and his bitten off face. He was a prick, and he got what he deserved, but I suppose that means it's okay, does it? That's how it goes. These foolish things seem still to be on. Does this song ever end? I ask. Eventually, says Forbes, smiling. We stand and listen for the moment. It's all vocals and piano. It's a great sound, not entirely sure it's appropriate to the setting, but we all need a little light. Is there a percussion, I ask, just as Callas turns away. Sure, but it's buried. Ella's records were all about her voice, but it's there if you listen. We stand quietly, listen to Ella for another few moments. Drums and bass are mixed way back. Maybe I'll stick that on Spotify later. Bob won't mind if I take a night off. A nod, an acceptance that this interlude is over, and then Callas and I are walking out of the mortuary, back into the world. Didn't take long, and one of her suppositions has proved right. Footage of Tatum in a mountain warehouse in a retail park this side of East Kilbride. You stood out? Asked Callas. Not at all, says the guy. Brian, early 20s, the store manager. When I was that age, I couldn't manage my underwear drawer. We're getting loads of this kind of thing at the moment. Nobody's got the money for fancy-ass holidays anywhere. And you couple that with the good weather and Bob's your builder. This is the busiest period I've seen in this place in 8 years. What age are you? I can't stop myself asking. Ha! Been working in here since I was 15. I know, I keep saying, I'm going to use my staff discount, buy up some decent stuff and head off out into the world, get an adventure, you know, like walk through France and Spain, maybe into North Africa. Then I'd love to balls out and walk through the Levant. I mean, that's like, what's his name, Bilbo, when Gandalf says to him, maybe you won't come back, you wee cunt, but if you do, you'll have a story to tell. That's pretty much the direct quote from the movie. I can't help smiling. Then Callas, in her way, without reproach, quietly steers the interview back on track, meaning that I don't say that he's probably doing the right thing, prevaricating like fuck about walking through North Africa and the Levant. Can we speak to the person who served Mr. Tatum? Yeah, darling, he says, then he looks between his eyes wide. You work in the shop floor? Wee Janice phoned in sick yesterday. I gave Alice a call and she's like, I don't think so, mate, it's my day off. And I thought about phoning Mad Eye, but to be honest, I'm a bit scared of Mad Eye. I know that's terrible for the manager, right, but the cunt's like 50-something. I think he's been in prison a couple of times. It's good, I mean, don't get me wrong, we got on great guns and that, but I don't like asking him anything unexpected. Play it straight and all that. Brian's a talker. Talkers are good, of course, because unguarded talk is the lifeblood of police work. And also bad, because there's a fair chance we could stand here all evening and Brian wouldn't tell us anything else of use. Then again, it's already gone 7:30 and we're wrapping up the day when we're done here. How did Mr. Tatum seem? Asked Callas. I don't know. Human? I mean, how do you mean that? Did he stand out in any way? I say, although it's not like Callas needs translating. I just feel I should try to be engaged, rather than letting my mind drift away to the wonders of Levant. Was there anything remarkable about him? You called us here, so when you saw his face in the news, did you immediately think, ah, that makes sense. Nice, he says. He's been nodding along. I get you. He was a bit fidgety. I'm like, ah, he bet. Did you see that guy? He's like, ah. He mimics something or other using jerky hand movements that seem quite generic, but I guess we get what he means. Looking over his shoulder, not so sure, more keeping his head down, right? I mean, you see that in the footage from that wee beauty up there? He jerks a thumb in the direction of the camera behind the sales counter. You have the printout of everything you bought? Natch, he says. He reaches back, lifts a copy of the receipt off the counter and hands it to me. I open it out, it's in standard till receipt form, and hold it in such a way that Callas has a slightly better view of it than I do. He spent £557, a tent, a sleeping bag, a ground mat, stove, a rucksack, walking boots, blister plasters, transgear, fuel, pocket knife, coat, waterproof matches, the full shebang. What does all that tell you? Asked Callas. He looks at her, wondering perhaps if she's been serious and accepts that she wants his opinion on something rather than just a statement of what happened. He bought decent lightweight stuff. I says to him, "You go for the walk, mate?" And he didn't really reply. Kind of mumbled. No idea what he said, but I got the vibe right. Some customers want to talk and some don't. Like women and sex, am I right? He smiles at me. Not appropriate. Sure, totally. Basically, he bought a ton of stuff, but decent, so he'll be able to carry it all. I'd say he's going for the walk. I mean, the cunt's definitely going for the walk. Any clues to whereabouts from this gear? There's no map or anything. Nah, I mean, you'd use the same stuff anywhere, really, except maybe for the desert or rainforest. But you'd buy what he bought if you were walking in the Highlands, down south, into Europe, the Alps and that. Could be going anywhere. This guy wanted in connection with the bastard getting murdered. The tent, I say, ignoring the murder inquiry. It's a pop-up type of... God, aye. Really nice, really easy. Nadine Doris could put it up. She's a spanner. So it's self-supporting from inside. You don't need to, you know, like, whack pegs into the ground to support the height. You could put it up in your front room, but aye, obviously you've got pegs in that. Don't know why you put it up in your front room, to be fair, but it'd fit. It's wee as fuck. Space for the guy, squeeze the rucksack in, but beyond that, you're fucked if you want so much as fart in there. But it's quality. Do you seem in a rush? Asks Callis, relentlessly trying to keep the interview on track. Brian gives it a thinking stare, and I'm suddenly reminded of Winnie the Pooh, and then I wonder, where the fuck did that come from? How deeply buried was that from 20 years ago, that one time I actually paid attention to my kids? Not now, guilt. Leave me alone. He was like the wolf in Pulp Fiction, says Brian. Ah, the wolf. Looks like Brian and I have the same cultural reference points. If he starts quoting Dylan, I might have to see if he wants to go for the pint. Seriously, he could turn out to be Bob's pool boy, and I would not want to see if he wanted to go for the pint. Not rushed, but practical and efficient, says Callis. Exactamundo. He made a shopping list, so he'd obviously given it some thought before he got here. Knew exactly what he was looking for, didn't speak to anyone, didn't ask for help, just walked around taking things off shelves and pegs a couple of times he came over and left stuff by the counter. When he was done, paid like a badger, and off he fucked. What does the badger reference imply? Asked Callis. Just, you know, just an expression. I did not know it. Basically, he paid and left. That was it. The badger is of no significance. None. Sorry. That is fine. Is there anything further you would like to add? Brian does the thinking face again, scratching the side of his face, and shakes his head. Not sure that there is, he says. You didn't buy any of that then, I ask, indicating the bottles of smidge midgy repellent by the checkout. Nah. So he wasn't walking in the Highlands then, or else he didn't think about it because he's never actually walked in the Highlands before. Asked him if he wanted any, says Brian. Okay, good. Well, that narrows it down. He likely didn't go to the Highlands, just leaves the rest of the world. Need you to make a statement, I say. You all right to come into the station tomorrow morning? A statement? You've seen the police shows, right? Aye. This is like the shows. People make written statements to the police. They sign them, then the police use that as evidence when they're building a case. That's what happens. Right? Don't sometimes people who give statements get killed in shows because they've helped the police? Okay. Who was the idiot who started talking about shows? What time can you come in tomorrow to make a statement? He looks unhappy about it, then thinks some more, shakes his head, stares at the ceiling. I'm not on here until midday. Let's say 11. Wait, which station are you talking about? Cambus Line. What? Are you kidding? That's Glasgow. Calm the fuck down, son. It's literally 10 minutes from here. Got a car? Aye, he says. If you can walk from Algeria to Iran, you can drive to Cambus Line. I mean, if you insist, you can go into East Kilbride and give a statement there, but it's hardly that much closer, and parking's better down our way. Fuck, all right, man. Better make it 10. Thank you. Someone will be there to take a statement. Someone? Jesus. Anything else off the top of your head? Nah. And with that, and a quick glance around the shop, Callis and I are walking out of the store into the warmth of early evening, and then, soon enough, sitting in the car, ready to head back down the road. I feel we are making progress, says Callis. Now, I am going home. Would you like to drop to the station or at your apartment? I'll drop you at your apartment, she says. It has been a long day. I can pick you up in the morning if you do not want to walk into work. Hardly on your way. It's fine. Okay, thank you. And really, I'll be fine to walk in the morning. It's going to be nice again. She drives out of the car park and stops at the red light. So much left unsaid in our lives. A couple of minutes later, heading past Kirkcole Golf Club, I say, you were just winding him up about the badger, I take it. She doesn't answer. I give her the quick glance, small smile on her face.